Chapter 26. The Two Western Republics. First, the beginnings of the Latins. Second, a new sort of state. Third, the Carthaginian Republic of rich men. Fourth, the First Punic War. Fifth, Cato the Elder and the Spirit of Cato. Sixth, the Second Punic War. Seventh, the Third Punic War. Eighth, how the Punic War undermined Roman liberty. Ninth, comparison of the Roman Republic with a modern state. First, it's now necessary to take up the history of the two great republics of the Western Mediterranean, Rome and Carthage, and to tell how Rome succeeded in maintaining for some centuries an empire even greater than that achieved by the conquests of Alexander. But this new empire was, as we shall try to make clear, a political structure, differing very profoundly in its nature from any of the great Oriental empires that had preceded it. Great changes in the texture of human society and in the conditions of social interrelations had been going on for some centuries. The flexibility and transferability of money was becoming a power, and like all powers in inexpert hands, a danger in human affairs. It was altering the relations of rich men to the state and to their poorer fellow citizens. This new empire, the Roman Empire, unlike all the preceding empires, was not the creation of a great conqueror. No Sargon, no Totmes, no Nebuchadnezzar, no Cyrus, nor Alexander, nor Chandragupta was its fountainhead. It was made by a republic. It grew by a kind of necessity, through new concentrating and unifying forces that were steadily gathering power in human affairs. At first, it's necessary to give some idea of the state of affairs in Italy in the centuries immediately preceding the appearance of Rome in the world's story. Before 1200 BC, that's to say before the rise of the Assyrian Empire, the siege of Troy and the final destruction of Knossos, but after the time of Amenophis IV, Italy, like Spain, was probably still inhabited mainly by dark white people of the more fundamental Iberian or Mediterranean race. This aboriginal population was probably a thin and backward one. But already in Italy, as in Greece, the Aryans were coming southward. By 1000 BC, immigrants from the north had settled over most of the north and center of Italy, and as in Greece, they had intermarried with their darker predecessors and established a group of Aryan languages, the Italian group, more akin to the Celtic, Gaelic, than to any other, of which the most interesting, from the historical point of view, was that spoken by the Latin tribes in the plains south and east of the river Tiber. Meanwhile, the Greeks had been settling down in Greece, and now they were taking to the sea and crossing over to South Italy and Sicily and establishing themselves there. Subsequently, they established colonies along the French Riviera and founded Marseille upon the site of an older Phoenician colony. Another interesting people also had come into Italy by sea. These were a brownish, sturdy people, to judge from the pictures they've left of themselves. Very probably, they were a tribe of those Aegean dark whites who were being driven out of Greece and Asia Minor, and the islands in between, by the Greeks. We've already told the tale of Knossos in chapter 15, and the settlement of the kindred Philistines in Palestine in chapter 19. These Etruscans, as they were called in Italy, were known even in ancient times to be of Asiatic origin. And it's tempting, but probably unjustifiable, to connect this tradition with the Aeneid, the sham epic of the Latin poet Virgil, in which the Latin civilization is ascribed to Trojan immigrants from Asia Minor. But the Trojans themselves were probably an Aryan people allied to the Phrygians. These Etruscan people conquered most of Italy north of the Tiber from the Aryan tribes who were scattered over that country. Probably the Etruscans ruled over a subjugated Italian population, so reversing the state of affairs in Greece, in which the Aryans were uppermost. Our map, which may be taken to represent roughly the state of affairs about 750 BC, also shows the establishments of the Phoenician traders, of which Carthage was the chief, along the shores of Africa and Spain. Of all the peoples actually in Italy, the Etruscans were by far the most civilized. They built sturdy fortresses of the Mycenaean type of architecture. They had a metal industry. They used imported Greek pottery of a very fine type. The Latin tribes on the other side of the Tiber were, by comparison, barbaric. The Latins were still a rude farming people. The center of their worship was a temple to the tribal god Jupiter upon the Alban Mount. There they gathered for their chief festivals, very much after the fashion of the early tribal gathering we've already imagined at Avebury. This gathering place was not a town, it was a high place of assembly. There was no population permanently there. There were, however, 12 townships in the Latin League. At one point upon the Tiber there was a ford, and here there was a trade between Latins and Etruscans. At this ford, Rome had its beginnings. Traders assembled there, and refugees from the 12 towns found an asylum and occupation at this trading center. Upon the 7 hills near the ford, a number of settlements sprang up, which finally amalgamated into one city. Most people have heard the story of the two brothers Romulus and Remus who founded Rome, and the legend of how they were exposed as infants and sheltered and suckled by a wolf. Little value is now attached to this tale by modern historians. The date, 753 BC, is given for the founding of Rome, but there are Etruscan tombs beneath the Roman Forum of a much earlier date than that, and the so-called tomb of Romulus bears an indecipherable Etruscan inscription. The peninsula of Italy was not then the smiling land of vineyards and olive orchards it has since become. It was still a rough country of marsh and forest, in which the farmers grazed their cattle and made their clearings. Rome, on the boundary between Latin and Etruscan, wasn't in a very strong position for defence. At first there were perhaps Latin kings in Rome. Then it would seem the city fell into the hands of Etruscan rulers whose tyrannous conduct led at last to their expulsion, and Rome became a Latin-speaking republic. The Etruscan kings were expelled from Rome in the 6th century BC, while the successors of Nebuchadnezzar were ruling by the sufferance of the Medes in Babylon, while Confucius was seeking a king to reform the disorders of China, and while Gautama was teaching the Aryan way to his disciples at Benares. Of the struggle between the Romans and the Etruscans we can't tell in any detail here. The Etruscans were the better armed, the more civilized, and the more numerous, and it would probably have gone hard with the Romans if they had had to fight them alone. But two disasters happened to the Etruscans which so weakened them that the Romans were able at last to master them altogether. The first of these was a war with the Greeks of Syracuse in Sicily, which destroyed the Etruscan fleet, 474 BC.